Show me the money.
This is the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rake Fanica.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Be a Better Investor podcast. My name is Rake Fanica, and in this podcast series, I speak to leading professional investors about their investment journeys as well as their personal investment decisions. We look at their first investments and how their investment strategies have changed over the years. We also take a look into their personal portfolios to see whether they practice what they preach. And the idea is to find a few golden nuggets of wisdom to help young amateur retail investors to become better investors. My guest today is Sanolesiwe Tofile. He is the Deputy Chief Investment Officer and a Portfolio Manager at All Weather Capital. He has been at All Weather since 2014 when he started as an equity analyst. And before joining All Weather, he was an analyst at the National Treasury. He is also a CFA charter holder. Sanolesiwe, thank you so much for your time today. First of all, tell us a bit about yourself. Where did you come from and where did you grow up, and of what career did you dream about when you were young?
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me. Appreciate the time. That's a very introspective question. I don't know. I'm not sure if other investors thought that way about it. But grew up in the Eastern Cape, small town called Bisho, which also happens to be the capital of Eastern Cape. I'm not sure if a lot of people know that. I went to school in King Williamstown, primary school, central primary, which is a kind of small primary school, sort of towards the outside of the town. Then I went to Dale College, which was a pretty decent rugby school. I think we've had one or two good rugby players come out of Dale. But I myself never played rugby. Then went on to study.
I think there were more than one or two. It's a big rugby school.
Perhaps a few. And then I went on to Rhodes University. I mean, you ask about what I studied and what I intended to study. It was a bit of a journey in itself because I eventually ended up studying commerce and economics and investments and the likes. But I think I had an intention to study law. I seem to just remember a ride to Rhodes on the day. It was a cloudy day as well, driving from King Williamstown to Grahamstown, about a 2-hour car ride. And in that car ride, I made a last minute decision to ditch law and go into commerce.
Why? That's a big decision to make in a car.
It feels that way. And I'm not sure why. And I think in that car ride, it's a two-hour car ride. It went from law, and I'd seen that, you know, in the prospectus for roles and what courses they offer and the likes, they had this thing called BCom Law. And I thought that was a nice midway point to go and decide, okay, I'm going to do BCom Law. And then by the end of the trip, when I got to the registrar's desk and registering there, I was like, you know what, forget the law. Let me just do BCom. And I can't tell you why. It was an instinct. It was maybe a bit of foresight in my end about what might happen in my life and everything else. But ended up doing BCom. And I had designs of being a CA. But in second year, I changed my mind. And I was like, you know, I don't necessarily dislike accounting. I actually kept on with accounting to third year. It was one of my majors. But I just kind of liked economics and investments and ended up doing that with my honors. And then I did CFA as well. And as you've already mentioned, I landed in National Treasury, was there for about 3.5 years, and then got my opportunity here at All Weather Capital.
When were you first exposed to the investment world?
So it was probably mainly through varsity, because again, when I went to varsity, I wasn't actually, as you can hear from my first answer, I wasn't actually sure what I was trying to do or what I wanted to do. And through my studies, I think I gravitated towards economics and investing. And that's where I was first exposed to obviously the theory around modeling and everything else. And then I also became exposed in my honors year when we had to do a project around making an investment case. And that's where I got exposed to at least a small bit of what the job of like an investment professional might do. I'd say it was mostly in varsity.
But then you went to the National Treasury. You were an analyst there. I'm sure that must have been a very interesting time in your life. And then you had to take the decision. Listen, I would rather go to the investment world, join an asset manager,
Tell us about that decision and why you actually made that jump.
Look, my time at National Treasury was actually very productive for me because I met a different kind of sort of group of people, I should say. And I think I learned a lot about how the government works. But I'd always wanted to come into investments. So during my time at Treasury, I was studying my CFA as well with a view of once I'm complete with that, I'll go into investments. But I think I had a fortunate situation. One day, a friend of mine calls me up and says, look, these two guys, one of them being Shane Watkins, our CIO and founder, these two guys are starting a hedge fund. Would you like to go talk to them? And obviously, through my studies and my reading and everything else, and my interest in investments, I knew that, you know, hedge funds were this like particularly exciting niche in investments. Well, I had to go see what these guys have to say. And, you know, as they say, you know, the rest is history, but, you know, I met them, had a conversation, a couple of interviews. They liked me, I liked them. And 10 years down the line, here I am. So it was really just piquing my interest just from a almost like a slightly different perspective, because I hadn't actually even known that hedge funds were that readily available in South Africa, which they aren't really, but the opportunity to work at one was really what piqued my interest.
Yeah, most definitely. The hedge fund world is an interesting one. Tell us, what was your very first investment you made with money you have earned?
Yeah, so I think it was around 2000. Yeah, it must have been around 2011. It was my first year of working. And I joined this investment club with a couple of friends and some colleagues. And the first share I suggested the guys buy was this company, small company called Finbon. To be honest, I can't tell you why. And with hindsight, I can tell you that I had very little knowledge about, you know, what I was doing. You know, after looking at a couple of charts and reading one or two things, I said, you know what, Finbon is a good idea. So we bought a little bit of Finbon.
It turned out not to be such a good idea. Did you get out quickly?
To be fair, so I mean, I think at the time it was kind of trading at 40 cents, and I think it's back at 40 cents now. But if you look at the chart, it's had a bit of an eventful timeline because it peaked at 6 Rand or just less than 6 Rand at some point, I think around 2020, 2019. So there was something happening that was good there, but it obviously came all the way crashing down again. And to be fair to you, I can't say really why that was the case, but you know, I think we exited quite early on because for a long time, it just kind of traded in the 40 cents, 50 cents range. So we exited at some point before the big jump, but that was my first investment, just a little throwaway investment, I guess, if you can call it that.
But that was as part of an investment club. Tell us about this club. How many were you? What were your relations? And what was your whole decision-making method? How did you decide on which investments to make?
Yeah, so there was, if I had to guess, there were probably like 10 or 15 of us in the club at the time that I eventually had to leave because I just didn't want to have to deal with conflicts of interest with working in the investment industry. But I think 10 or 15 of us by the time that I left, we had a monthly standing meeting. We'd meet sort of every Tuesday or Wednesday evening, have a couple of beers, you know, maybe a meal or whatever, and just chat about investments and what we're seeing and what we want to do. And the idea was to club in, I think at the time it was 10,000 Rand a year.
Into the club.
And you use that to make investment ideas. And the idea was to grow into something meaningful because one of my friends, one of my university friends' bosses had done this with his peers once upon a time. And I think at that time, when we were starting, they had grown their portfolio to a meaningful number and they had diversified into offshore investments. I think this was something in the tens of millions now that they had in this portfolio over obviously a long time, but they had grown it to something significant. So that was the idea with us as well.
And were you good at it?
Look, I would say we had some hits and some misses, which is the case with investments generally. But like I said, unfortunately, I had to leave after like 2 or 3 years. So quite early on, I actually don't know what the guys are up to now. I haven't really kept up. But I think in the time we were able to grow the fund a little bit. I remember one particular investment that we made, we bought Naspers at about 700 Rand. So if the guys had kept it at that level, then it would have been a great investment for them.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't hear from many young people these days that they are involved in investment clubs. And I think it's such an excellent idea to engage with your peers and how they measure investment opportunities. And I think the learning experience is, in many cases, a lot more valuable than the actual financial outcome. Are you aware of young people also, well, still, you know, forming these clubs and talk about investments on a regular basis?
Unfortunately, Rick, I would have to agree with you that I don't seem to see a lot of people doing that. I think there's a number of things at play here. I mean, firstly, in South Africa, you know, when you talk about moving through your life and the life cycles, really the conversation gravitates about getting an education, getting tertiary if you can, into a university or whatever the case is, and then getting a job and then carrying on with your life. And we have a perennially low savings rate in South Africa, precisely because people don't talk about what to do with your money for retirement, for current savings, saving for big projects or big life expenses and stuff like that. So there's a lack of a conversation around those things. So I think that is still the case now with this sort of young generation as well of people. People don't really talk about investments for any reason. So I think we might need to kind of have a look at that and see what we can do to kind of help people drive those type of conversations. I mean, I agree with you. It's a great way to make connections, to keep connections with friends and people who are like-minded, and also to build something significant, because at the end of the day, you are building a financial benefit for yourself if it works out. It's also a great way to build habits, you know, saving habit. You have to club in 10,000 rand a year, whatever your number is. You have to meet every week, every month, every so often, whatever the case is, and you have to engage with your peers around whatever you're seeing, your ideas and all that stuff. So it's a great way to create habits, to exchange ideas, and ultimately to build something of value for yourself and your peers. But unfortunately, I agree with you that people don't talk about it enough.
Let's talk about the period after you've left the investment club until today. I would imagine that is about 8 years, if my math is correct. Did you continue to invest in your personal capacity? You know, of course, you're a portfolio manager, but if you manage a fund, there's a mandate for the fund, and sometimes your risk profile does not align with the fund you manage. So just take us through how your investment journey in a personal capacity progressed from, you know, after leaving the club until today.
Yeah, so obviously, as you say, I do have personal investments. A lot of time, I think, for myself growing up was really having to build, firstly, a capital base. I didn't come from a fortunate background. So I had to, you know, for a few years, build a capital base. I obviously now do have a personal portfolio. You know, I've diversified, you know, separate from retirement funding, which is something I do as a, sort of a separate thing I save for my retirement. But I've also got a portfolio which I manage for myself, which is more for, I call it in my mind, growing wealth. It could be for anything, really, just, you know, developing my wealth. And you're right in saying that, you know, it's slightly different to what I do in terms of work and what we do here. And that really boils down to, I think the main thing is risk appetite. Obviously, our clients have certain liabilities or certain reasons that they need to invest and things they need to fund. So that drives their risk appetite. And for the large part, our business is an institutional business. The largest part of our client base is institutional. So that comes with, I think, very low risk appetite. You have to be very cautious and careful about how you manage your money. You have to do that anyway, even in your personal portfolio. But I think from a personal perspective, you know, I would say relative to what we manage in work here, I have a few more less positions in my portfolio and more concentrated positions, taking higher risks, not necessarily swinging for the fences, but just exercising a bit of a higher risk tolerance, if I can call it that.
Now, give us a peek into that portfolio. What assets are you invested in?
So I'd say that the biggest share that I've got now in my portfolio is Naspers Prosus. I think, obviously, being one of the only tech-based names in our index locally, you know, exposure to China, which may or may not be a good thing, depending on your view, but, you know, growth market, technology, new age type of asset, really important to have that, you know, if you're trying to build something or protect your financial well-being for the future. So I'd say that's one of the biggest investments. But a little bit of APSA, I think, you know, banking, secure, it is a GDP play. For APSA specifically, I like the valuation from a personal perspective, you know, so I've got a bit of APSA as well. And then a couple of others.
So you hold shares. You don't go the unit trust route, which is interesting because many other professional investors, they believe going into individual shares is too risky for them.
Again, I've taken the view that I want to try to make, I don't know what how to express it, but to make a significant amount of wealth for myself, if I can, in my personal portfolio by taking on some of these concentrated positions in individual shares, which might be able to run, you know, harder than, say, an index level. For the long term, yes, you know, people should have, you know, a diversified portfolio, which I feel I do because I do kind of bucket my investments into various things for various reasons. Like I mentioned, you know, I've got a retirement portion of my portfolio, which I don't look at. I just kind of contribute, you know, periodically to that and make sure that that grows over the meaningful period of time. And there are unit trusts and things like that in that. So I think this personal portfolio that I'm managing is just really for me to also keep myself engaged with what I'm doing professionally, right? And then hopefully that kind of turns out into something that is meaningful for me in the future. So I think I've diversified my personal portfolio in that way by making sure that I've got various parts of my current assets being, you know, invested in different ways.
If you could go back in time and go and speak to the Sanelizwe of 10 years ago, what would your advice be for yourself on how to approach investments?
I would say you need to stick to your guns. I'll kind of try to explain what that means. I think a lot of what I've experienced, you know, up to this point in my career, there's been obviously a lot of learning that I've done, but within that learning, I've had to learn, you know, when to be convicted, when to take a step back and change your mind and revisit an investment case or revisit whatever you're engaging with someone about. But what I've kind of picked up perhaps along the way is certain instances or certain examples where I've capitulated on an idea or views and I not really expressed myself all that much. I've found that maybe if I had just been stronger in debating my view, it might have worked out differently. Look, a lot of that comes because of the kind of, I guess, personality trait or personality type that I am. I'm more quiet, considerate person, more cautious. So I tend to not push, you know, as hard. So I'd say throughout your career, learn to be a bit more, I mean, for lack of a better term, aggressive, just in the way you express your views. I think that would have helped me achieve a bit more from 10 years ago.
Yeah, I like that because when you're young and just starting out, you may not have a lot of money, but you have time, and time is a significant asset to have because in the long term, compounding can make a big, big difference. Now, lastly, the two big questions. First of all, what do you think has been your best investment ever?
So, Rick, I know you're looking for a stock here, and obviously if you push me for a stock, I'll give one to you.
No, the but one, if you need to explain around a briar to someone and you talk about investment, it's a very, very broad field, definitely not a share. If it's a share, then so be it. But the one you think you've taken the best decision, investment decision.
So not quite. So that's the reason I kind of started with my little caveat, but not quite an investment decision. But I think personally, the best investment I've done is investing in myself. So investing in growing my skill set, investing in growing my network to a certain extent, investing in growing in my abilities to become, to always be trying to be a better investor. I think that's the single biggest kind of impact that's been in my life in terms of where I could have been from 10 years ago or where I could be now. So I think that the investing the time, the money obviously to pay for my, you know, my own studies and all those stuff, that's been feel like a very good investment for myself. Obviously I'm not a company or a security, but that I feel like that's probably the one answer I'd say I'll be more than happy to give you.
Yeah, I think investing in yourself is a big investment. If you invest in health, it's always also a big investment, and it's a matter of perspective. But now the other one, what do you think has been the biggest investment mistake you have ever made?
So from a, and I'm going to say this from a, even from a personal investment point of view, one of the worst investments I have made is buying this little company called KAP. Now,
what is the company name?
KAP, K-A-P.
Oh, yeah, the industrial KAP group. Industrial. Holding, yes.
Mm. Yeah, yes. So it's had a also quite eventful past coming out of Steinhoff and, you know, going out on its own and all of that. But there was a period where it was growing quite nicely and they wanted to diversify their opportunity set and all that. And they bought into this chemical business called Safripol, and they kind of ventured into this market, which I feel as though they may not have known too much about. But for me specifically, I remember buying into a particular book build around, I want to say 2017 or 2016. And I mean, I think my all-in cost there was probably around 6.50 rand or 7 rand. I don't remember in that region. And obviously, we know where the share is trading today. So it's been one of the ones that detracted the most value from my personal investment perspective.
Now, even the best investors make mistakes. That is reality. You just need to limit the extent of the losses you suffer. And I think many professional investors are a lot better at doing that than a normal amateur retail investor where emotion starts to take over when things go south. But we'll have to leave it there, Sanelisiwe. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us and all of the best for the future.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me and same to you.
Thank you. That was Sanelisiwe Tofile. He's the Deputy Chief Investment Officer and a Portfolio Manager at All Weather Capital.
Show me the money. That was The Money Web, Be a Better Investor podcast with Rick Van Niekerk. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the MoneyWeb podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.